It seems kind of hopeless right now, but you're going to figure this out.
This is pretty debilitating.
I'm able to turn my pain into purpose.
There are people out in the world that do understand what you're going through.
Welcome to Major Pain. I'm your host, Jesse Mercury, and this week I have a great conversation to share with you with Mackenzie about her chronic illness journey. Each week on Major Pain, I ask our guests, what is your major pain? And for the first time, Mackenzie's answer was pain. Even though she has this huge list of diagnoses, her major pain is living with severe chronic pain for the better part of 14 years, and the rage and the anger that comes along with that experience. Mackenzie's journey has been very intense. At 21 years old, she had a brain surgery for a severe Chiari malformation, which, according to the ClevelandClinic.org, is a structural abnormality in your skull that causes part of your brain to move into your spinal canal. She's also been diagnosed with several autoimmune conditions, including lupus, Sjogren's, and Hashimoto's disease. According to the MayoClinic.org, lupus is a disease that occurs when your body's immune system attacks your own tissues and organs. Sjogren's syndrome is a disorder of your immune system identified by its two most common symptoms, dry eyes and a dry mouth. And Hashimoto's disease is an autoimmune disorder affecting the thyroid gland. In Hashimoto's disease, immune system cells lead to the death of the thyroid's hormone-producing cells. The disease usually results in a decline in hormone production, or hypothyroidism. During my conversation with Mackenzie, we were trying to remember if Hashimoto's results in an overactive or underactive thyroid, and I promised her that I would look it up and put it in our intro, so there you go. Hashimoto's generally results in an underactive thyroid. I'm happy to report that Mackenzie is currently experiencing healing for the first time since her journey began. In 2023, she started working with a functional medicine practice, and for the first time feels like she's being not only educated about what's happening in her body, but supported in making progress. But before reaching that point, Mackenzie experienced some horrific treatment at the hands of several of her doctors. Her story of learning that she has lupus is very shocking. Mackenzie was a delight to chat with. This is such a powerful conversation. It is very emotional and revealing, and I'm so grateful to Mackenzie for being so open with us in sharing her story. We'll get to this interview in just a couple minutes. We got some really great responses to last week's episode with Marisa about living with mast cell activation syndrome. On our website, Morgan comments, "There's a doctor in Boston who's doing research on whether faulty connective tissue can turn on the gene for MCAS." Morgan continues, "Levocentrazine's brand name is Zizol, quite literally a more potent Zyrtec, although there is a rare side effect of severe depression." And that answers a question that Marisa and I had while we were chatting last week. Morgan, thank you so much for your comment. Morgan was the first person to come on the podcast and talk about mast cell activation syndrome as part of the EDS triad, Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, POTS, and MCAS. So it's very exciting to hear about this research in Boston about whether faulty connective tissue can turn on MCAS. Like we were saying last week, there's just not enough research yet about how MCAS works, about how it functions, whether or not it's genetic, whether it's acquired, or if all of the above can be true. Something I love about doing this podcast is getting information from listeners like Morgan who are up to date on the research and then being able to share it with you all. So thank you, Morgan. Over on Instagram, JL Parquez comments, "This was an extremely informative and eloquent episode. Even though I do not have MCAS, it was integral to more deeply understand the complexities of living with chronic illness and how to show up for my friends and others as they experience MCAS. Bravo." Some Things Matter comments, "What a great episode. You are so supportive and enthusiastic about every guest, but this time we also got to hear your joy at connecting with another patient. I learned a lot and have to commend both you and Marisa for dealing with such a complex and invisible disease. I have to ask, what does a typical day of eating and medication slash supplementation look like? It seems like it would be super hard. Also, can we just recognize that Marisa is allergic to coffee? Even the smell, that alone would be debilitating." This is, of course, our friend Jennifer, who appeared on the podcast discussing CFS slash ME a while back. And this is a great question. What does a typical day of eating and medication slash supplementation look like? I can't speak for Marisa. I know everyone with MCAS has different needs, different supplements, and different sensitivities. But for me personally, I take medication 7 times a day for MCAS. I take Cromolyn sodium half an hour before each meal and then before bedtime. And then with each meal, I have a pill container that is full of pills that I take 3 times a day. And of course, eating a low histamine diet is a full-time job. I cook every meal. Eating out is extremely risky. I do it on occasion, but for the most part, I'm cooking 3 times a day. Sometimes I get lazy and just eat snacks for lunch. But, you know, a low histamine diet is a big topic. It would take a long time to talk through that. If people are interested, I am happy to do that. Maybe we do a special episode about the low histamine diet, or I can make a TikTok about it. Let me know if that's something you want to hear more about. And lastly, Savvy at Life comments, I loved listening to your podcast. You are supporting others and educating and making others aware of how painful this is. Unless someone is close to this, it's hard to see not only what you deal with moment by moment, but what exceptional people you are. I hope that you continue this conversation because it is important and there is so much more to this than you had time for. And that is definitely true. Marisa and I had so much more we did not cover on last week's episode. Thank you for your very kind comment, Savvy at Life. If you're enjoying the Major Pain Podcast, there are several great ways to support this show. I very much need your support to keep the show going. You can subscribe on Patreon to get bonus content, special recognition on the show, and more when you sign up with monthly financial contributions, starting at just $2 per month. Extra special thank you to our Patreon producers supporting the show at our highest tier of $25 per month, Steve Kavanaugh, Chris Fowler, Trish O'Brien, and Hipster Leia. You can also click one of our affiliate links that are listed in the show notes of every episode, Rare Patient Voice, where you can be paid for your time to participate in research studies and surveys, our Amazon shop, where I've listed several of the supplements that I use to deal with mast cell activation syndrome, and our brand new affiliate, NeuroHealth, an online neurology clinic that can provide you with the neurological support you need without the wait. Check them out at neurohealth.co/majorpain. Don't forget to follow Major Pain on social media. We are on TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, and now Facebook, all at Major Pain Podcast. And it is always super helpful to leave a positive rating and review wherever you listen to Major Pain. I'll remind you, as always, that my guest and I are not medical professionals. Please do not take any medical action based off what you hear on this podcast without first consulting your doctor. And with that, we'll jump into our fascinating interview with Mackenzie. Mackenzie, welcome to the podcast.
Nice to be here. It's nice and quiet in my house because my children are asleep and my dog is presently not in the room, which is great.
Yeah, this is a nice evening recording. We actually just connected like last week. This is happening
very
quick.
I don't think I even asked, are you also on the West Coast?
Yeah, I'm in Seattle.
Seattle, okay. I just moved to Northern California last July from Detroit.
Oh, wow, cool.
So I'm just still very new to the West Coast.
Wow, yeah, I grew up in Southern California, actually, and just came up here, I think, 14 years ago, something like that. But I've been a West Coast kid my whole life.
We like it. We're not going back. We just bought a house, so we're sticking around.
So we just connected, and I barely know anything about you, so I'm really excited to get to know you today. I've seen a little bit on your Instagram, and I know that we do similar types of advocacy work, so I'm really excited to get into all that. But before we do, let's get to know you a little bit. So Mackenzie, why don't you tell us about yourself?
Well, my name is Mackenzie Johns, and like I said, I just recently relocated to Northern California, and I'm married to a really amazing man. His name is Pradeep Johns. My husband was born and raised in India, but we like to joke that he's like more American than I am now. Like, I'm far more like culturally involved with like India than he is at this point in time. And then we have two beautiful boys that we have adopted. Our 3-year-old, he's almost 3 and a half now. His name is Elijah, and we adopted him in 2020. And our youngest son just turned 1 at the beginning of this month. And his name is Abhinav. They're both amazing and crazy and exhausting. But also have given me that purpose that I've needed to just get up in the morning on the days when I used to be able to choose not to. I don't have that luxury quite anymore in the same capacity, but they're amazing. And that's a whole nother story of infertility and what chronic illness has done to my body and to our marriage and what that's looked like. Yeah. But my husband and I like to say that We truly believe that God blesses with our children very intentionally, and that even if we could have had children, no child would have been more fit for our family than our two boys are at this point in time. And we feel so grateful to be in that place of healing. You know, that was a whole different season of grieving, walking through infertility and then through the adoption process. And we had two failed adoptions before we had our sons.
Wow.
And just
wow.
different things like that. So they're amazing, but they're actually crazy. They make great content for social media because...
Yeah, I mean, you must be so busy. When and if you have a moment to yourself, how do you unwind? Yeah. What's your hobby? What's your passion?
Oh, my hobby. Well, I love my job. And I like to think that it's what keeps me sane amidst my chronic health. And I'm married to a first responder. My husband is an ER trauma physician, which is why we relocated. And then two children under three. And then we also have a special needs dog, which is a whole nother thing altogether. By profession, I'm a board certified behavior analyst. I've been a behavior analyst for about 10 years and primarily have worked in the area of autism intervention, behavior modification, and worked clinically for a lot of years, but it was very taxing on my body physically, working with children, working with some very aggressive children, children who had a lot of just different needs and physical supports. But I now own and run an autism intervention company in India. And so I get to still be involved in the amazing work of autism advocacy, but I get to do it from my computer and I get to help other women and men across the world. Actually, we've invested in a couple other companies across the world, Brazil, Indonesia, Australia, and India. And just get to help people do their job better, excel in leadership skills, people management, things like that. But I get to travel. So I get to actually go to India in 3 weeks, which to me, that is the most life-giving thing, to travel without my children, to do something that I love. That's what gives me life.
Wow, that's incredible. That's very impressive. Well, I'm so curious to hear how your health weaves into this journey that you're on. So, Mackenzie, what is your major pain?
My major pain, I would say, I thought about this a lot. My major pain is pain. I have lived with severe chronic pain for the better part of 14 years.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of actual diagnoses that go into contributing to that specifically. You know, but as I sat and thought about, if I could boil it down to one word, to one thing, for me, it actually is just pain. And then also the rage and the anger that come with that, that come with living in a constant state of physical pain for so many years. I would like to say at this point in time, I'm finally healing. I have found things that are helping me and my body actually heal, you know, but the damage of what living a life like that for a better part of 15 years takes a toll on you mentally, emotionally, spiritually, physically. It's been a long, long road.
Wow. Absolutely. What are the diagnoses that you've received?
Great question. I told you earlier, I literally had to go back through and write some things down because it's all just, our medical histories can be so complex. And like you said, we've spent hours and hours in doctor's offices saying, here's my medical history. This is what other physicians have said. This is the medication I've been on, right? It becomes like robotic, but it's not. It's us. It's our story and it matters, you know? Yeah. And so for me, mine really started in my early and late teens, started getting chronic pain, was told my whole teenage life, you have migraines. It's genetic. Your sister has it. Your mom has it. And I started just adapting my life around, this is normal. Living with this amount of pain is normal. And I have to suck it up because everyone around me is telling me I'm fine. I was an athlete and I don't remember much of my childhood, which I've learned can be from chronic pain, from trauma, from all the things that come along with living this chronic life journey.
Yeah.
But I have very specific memories of like playing volleyball and like yelling during the game and like blacking out, like like not passing out, but blacking out, eyesight gone, collapsing to the floor. People are like, she's just really into the game. And in my back of my mind, you're like, this isn't good. Like something is wrong.
Blacking out from pain?
Like, yeah, like I would get this amazing amount of pressure in the back of my head, in the back of my skull. And I knew it was coming, and I could tell people, hey, I'm going to fall down, but I'll be right back. Stand back up and kind of just keep going on with my life. And that happened periodically throughout my athletic career. Mm. And I just sucked it up, for the lack of a better word, because people kept telling me I was fine. Wow. Fast forward, I had the privilege of going to Ohio State University for college. I was an art student before I became a behavior analyst, which is another story in another lifetime. But I remember coming back from India. I had gone to India a few times during undergrad to do some nonprofit work. And things just started getting consistently worse. I was blacking out more. I was falling down more. The pain was unbearable. And I work with my hands a lot. I was a sculptor and a painting, sculpture major and a painting major. So I was using my hand and my body in a very physical way all the time. And my housemates convinced me that I needed to go get some help. And I'm a really stubborn person, because I just have, up to that point in time, it was my job to power through. It was my job to figure out how to live life this way, because this was the only body that I had. And this was before I learned anything about any of my diagnoses. Had an MRI of my brain. Turns out I had the most severe case of Chiari-Arnold malformation that my neurologist at Cleveland Clinic had ever seen.
Wow.
And my brain stem had been pushed down through my foramen magnum, which is the hole in your skull where your brain stem comes down. My brain, the cerebellum, so cerebellum is like coordination, speech, swallowing, things like that. Like the act of it, like the muscles. It had been pushed down 32 millimeters and was wrapped around my brain stem.
Wow. And 32 millimeters in the brain, that's a lot.
Yes. I have definitely heard that many, many times. So from the time I had my first MRI to brain surgery was 9 days.
Wow.
Dropped out of that semester of college. Thankfully, I was going to college very close to Cleveland Clinic, was very blessed to have amazing doctors. I was 21 at the time, so I still technically counted as a pediatric case. They treated me so kindly in the pediatric ICU, which I was super, super grateful for. But it was also fast. I actually have such a disassociation from those couple of weeks. I don't remember most of it. My parents definitely do. I just had this really strange disassociation from, oh, there's a reason why I've been experiencing this pain. I need to have a major surgery. I might die. Maybe my life will be better if I come out of it alive. Like, wow. Just this very nonchalant attitude about it, right? When my other friends and people were like, you're having brain surgery. Like, you just had an MRI like 4 days ago. During college, I became really interested in like seeking out my own spirituality. I'd grown up in a very conservative Christian Northwest Ohio farm town, you know, and so going to college, I kind of just did my own exploration of faith and ended up becoming a Christian in college, and found that I just had a lot of peace about the situation. Not because I was like, it's in God's hands, like it was, but it was more so of like, I'm not crazy.
Yeah, totally.
Something was wrong with me
the whole time.
The whole time. My brain surgery, it's called decompression surgery, was on December 1st, 2010. I had plans to go back to India that next summer. And I was like, am I going to be better by then? You know, my mom was like, excuse me, you just had brain surgery. And I was like, yeah, I know. So there, you know, and that's really the beginning.
That's but the truly, beginning.
Oh, yeah.
I have a couple of questions. Can you tell us a little bit about Chiari malformation? This is something, yeah, I know that we've covered in the past, but my memory on it is hazy. I don't remember anyone else that I've talked to that's had it getting brain surgery for it. So is that because it was so much movement?
Yes. Okay. So Chiari malformation is actually a birth defect. It's not really genetic. It's not, and it can be X, Y, and Z. It's been associated with many different things. But at the end of the day, from my understanding, it was just something I was born with, because the hole in my skull, the foramen magnum, was shaped wrong. Hmm. It wasn't the way it was supposed to be, not the way it was created to be. And because of that, it puts an extra amount of pressure on your cerebellum, and in very severe cases, can completely stop cerebral brain fluid flow.
Wow.
Which is what your brain needs to function.
Yeah.
My amazing neurosurgeon, when I met her, she was like, "Sweet child, please stop driving. Please stop doing anything wherein you could possibly harm yourself or others. I don't know how you are walking." And to me, I was like, this is just how I've lived my life.
Yeah.
But as I spent time chatting with her in those first couple of appointments, she validated so many weird symptoms I had had over the years. Like I said, I had so much peace about the situation. No fear, no anxiety, because I was just like, awesome.
Yeah. What were some of the symptoms that she validated?
I would sneeze and I would just have this insane amount of pain go down my arms to my fingertips to the point where like I would fall down from like the severe pain that I would have. You know, just the blacking out but not losing consciousness was really just the pressure in my brain, like taking my eyesight for a few seconds at a time.
Wow.
Yeah, you know, things like that. Trouble breathing, but not that like my oxygen rate would drop. It was like I was having trouble actually remembering how to breathe.
Wow.
So think about swallowing, like how you swallow. The amount of pressure that was on the back of my head and in my brain, like my body would just forget how to do things. But I just kind of just like, oh, is this my life?
Obviously you have this amazing validation of like, yes, there's something wrong. There's this thing that is, you know, a birth defect that we can try to correct. Was there also a sense of peeling back a layer of your own identity and understanding yourself in a way that you never had before?
This is such a twofold question. And I know when I don't have to think about a response, it's because it's truly just, I feel like I immediately know the answer, and it's twofold. My first response to that would be, I wondered who I would be without pain.
Wow.
Would I know who I am? Would I know how to function? Would I feel like I had purpose? But the unfortunate second part to that response is it only got worse from there.
Wow. What happens next?
So for the next 5 years, my headaches went away. Praise God. My blacking out stopped. Amazing. Every other symptom I had been experiencing got worse. So my overall body pain, my swelling in my joints, just chronic fatigue, sleep, like insomnia, like not being able to sleep, but because of the pain, like I would just not be able to sleep. And I started getting some more, I guess what we could call the stereotypical autoimmune disorder symptoms. Started losing my hair, which was really, really hard for me.
Yeah.
Swollen glands, swollen joints, brain fog. And so for 5 years, I would go to doctors and they would say, well, Mackenzie, you had brain surgery. Of course you're struggling.
Ugh.
Mackenzie, like you had a severe trauma. You had very intensive brain surgery. Let's just put you on some more neurological drugs. And I was so uneducated at the time. I did not know how to advocate for myself. And so anytime somebody suggested a new drug, I was like, sure, if it's going to help me. And I remember it was in 2015. I had started dating. My husband was with him at the time and he was going into medicine, you know, and started kind of getting the sounding board of, why did they put you on that? Why are they doing this? Why are they doing that? And I'm like, I don't know. And we weren't living in the same state, so it's not like he could come to appointments with me. There was one point in time in 2015, I was on a couple different medications, and I don't want to name them because different medications work so great for other people and not for others. Yeah. And I've learned that I never want to bash a medication because my experience was bad with it, because it can truly be a life-saving drug for somebody else. But I was on this myriad of medications and no drama. I thought I was dying. I felt so horrible living in my own body. I'm like, this cannot be what life is about.
Yeah.
I, by the grace of God, was working at a school for children with autism where they had hyperbaric oxygen therapy treatments. It's called HBOT. And I was able to utilize that therapy for free, which is amazing because it's extremely expensive. And I was able to use that to help come off of these three drugs that I was on. So I went through a severe detox period. It was very horrible and kind of had a clean slate, which was good. I felt very positive about that. Fast forward to 2016, my husband and I had just gotten married. He had convinced me to finally go see a rheumatologist, which I had never seen before, because if you remember, every neurologist I had ever seen was like, it's all in your brain.
Yeah.
Not that it was hypothetical. It was like, no, it's your brain that's causing all these problems.
Yeah.
And had the worst experience I've ever had to date with a physician. Had all the blood work done, all the panels, all the things. And her medical assistant called me and was like, oh, hey, just letting you know, you have lupus. Your doctor will see you in 2 weeks.
What?
Provided no other information.
What?
See you later. Hung up the phone. And I told my husband, I was like, what just happened?
Oh, my God. What just happened?
So then we go to the appointment 2 weeks later, ready to kind of learn more about where were my levels actually at, what's going on. And she goes, well, everything looks great. And I said, excuse me, ma'am, that is not what your assistant said. She hadn't even reviewed my labs.
Oh, my before. God.
So she opens them up in the office and she's like, oh, you do have lupus. Anyway, we walked out.
Oh, my God.
It's only one of two times that I've ever physically stood up and walked out of an office. And I was like, never going back there.
That's wild. And it was, I mean, I hear stories like this a lot. I've experienced stuff along these lines, but that's pretty extreme. I mean,
it was insane. And I think if my husband hadn't been there, and he was a med student, right? So he's like learning bedside manners and how do you care for the patient? He was like, what just happened? Anyway, that aside, at that point in time in 2016, I was diagnosed with lupus, Hashimoto's, Sjogren's, one other thyroid disorder that I actually don't remember the name of, because I was like, I guess it doesn't really matter. I have all these other things going on. And they immediately put me on Plaquenil, which is kind of your token lupus drug, so I've heard. And they were like, well, let's see how it goes.
Wow. Okay, hold on. You got diagnosed with like three autoimmune conditions back to back to back.
Yeah.
Lupus, Sjogren's, and Hashimoto's, you said?
Yeah, yeah.
Wow. So let's do a quick rundown of these diagnoses. Give us the 60-second, what are each of these diseases?
Right. I'll keep it really simple. And I do this because my family doesn't like to listen, so I keep things pretty short for them. If anyone's listening to the podcast now, I love you all, family, but I'm just being honest. You know, lupus is an autoimmune disorder where your body starts to attack its own tissues.
Yeah.
There's a much more complex explanations as to why, but honestly, that's what it does. Your body is attacking itself, and it can affect many different things. It can affect major organs like your kidneys and your liver. You know, I've had friends who have been on the transplant list before in their early 20s and early 30s, you know, from lupus. Very, very severe diagnosis. By the grace of God, I was never in that position where, you know, my kidneys have ever been in a position where they've been failing or anything like that. I more so have suffered from some of the not secondary symptoms. I don't want to use that word by any means, but symptoms that more are chronic, but not life-threatening.
Yeah.
Right. And I say maybe not life-threatening. Maybe I even want to backtrack my own words and keep this in there, because it's chronic symptoms can become life-threatening because of the toll that it takes on our bodies, yeah, our minds, our relationships, like everything. They can become life-threatening without the right support systems in place. And I just want to make sure that people feel heard and known in that, because just because our bodies aren't physically shutting down doesn't mean the other parts of us aren't.
That's such a good point and well said. What are the chronic symptoms from lupus that you're experiencing?
Mine specifically are swollen glands. So I always have, always, not anymore because I'm healing, but we'll get to that later. I always would have swollen glands. So like the glands in my throat, the glands under my arms, just constant kind of swelling where you're like, oh, is that a cancer? Is that a gland? Again, God was gracious. I married a doctor. He's like, that's just a gland. He's very good at pulling me back off the ledge, which is fantastic. Yeah. Wow. But the chronic fatigue for me, I don't, and now also I'm a mother, you know, but just even before we had children and adopted children, you know, was just the chronic fatigue, swelling of my joints, brain fog, memory issues. I mean, it's great for marriage because you're like, I don't remember that conversation. What are you talking about? And like, they brain fog. The doctor told you, I have brain fog.
Yeah.
You know, I've learned to make some jokes out of it, but you know, for me, more specifically, you know, when it came to lupus, it was the pain that came from the symptoms. Again, going back to what my major pain was, I can deal with so many of the things that I've had to deal with, but living with the pain, and for me, it manifests really in my arms, my legs, my hands, and my feet. My torso has remained unscathed for the most part, which is great. But I started losing the ability to do things that I love. And I think that was really hard. Like I said, I literally went to school to be a painter, to paint. It brought me so much joy. I like to say that my art major got me through college, especially with my illnesses, to be able to process the emotions and the trials that I was going through. And, you know, I started losing the ability to hold a paintbrush, or I would paint and then the pain in my neck and my shoulders would be so intense, I couldn't do anything for the next 2 days. So the things that I loved started to become not things that I loved. They became things that were hard.
I've experienced that as well with making music. And I'm also, I went undiagnosed until I was 38 years old. So now that I'm diagnosed, I'm starting to make music again because I'm getting better. Mm-hmm. It's really intense when the thing that you feel like is your passion and your soul that's coming out of you that you feel like you're made to do, it's like, well, you can't do that because you're too sick. You know, it's a very difficult thing to grapple with.
Right. And then people ask you, like, what are your hobbies? You're like, surviving.
My hobby is lying on the couch in pain. What's your hobby?
Yeah, it's like, oh, I've watched the Lord of the Rings trilogy 30 times this year. What have you done?
Hey, good choice, though. I mean, guessing amen. Extended yes, editions.
Obviously.
Yeah.
No other option.
I spent the day yesterday green screening myself into Lord of the Rings in a Star Trek uniform. So I'm a bit of a nerd myself.
Oh my God. I love it so much. I literally just had, this has nothing to do with my journey. I literally just had the conversation with somebody the other day of like, I can't wait for the day when I get to watch The Lord of the Rings with my sons for the first time.
Oh,
and they
yeah.
like actually like get it and engage and like want to pretend to be Legolas and all. Oh, I can't wait.
Wow. I know. Totally. Like I can't wait to have kids and watch Star Trek and Star Wars and Lord of the Rings.
So excited.
And, yeah. So excited.
It brings me great, great joy. My husband knows I'm having a bad pain day if he comes home and The Lord of the Rings is on.
Yeah. Wow. I hear you.
But I wanted to speak just really quickly to the Hashimoto's diagnosis.
Yeah, please.
You know, in the rheumatologist that I went and saw after that horrible experience, he was my rheumatologist for a period of 5 years. And he was a very great man, didn't help me at all.
Oh,
and not to his own fault. Again, I just think there's still so much research and knowledge to be gained on how to actually help people with chronic illnesses within the modern medicine world. Whatever. It's hard. We're growing. I am holding my husband accountable to making sure they grow. But that being said, you know, one of the things that I struggled the most with when it came to my Hashimoto's, which I was thankful for the diagnosis because it shed a lot of light on things I had struggled with for years, was I had just massive swings in my weight gain. Mm. And I literally had blood work done last Monday and the phlebotomist?
Yeah, phlebotomist.
That's what they're called. Right.
Yeah.
Who was taking my blood. She goes, well, you don't look sick. You look amazing, right? Like how many times have we all heard that? You look healthy. You look amazing. You're too young. Well, I used to weigh 85 pounds more than I do right now. And I never could figure out why I was gaining weight. Mm. I was an athlete. I was a runner. I formed an eating disorder as a result of my weight gain because my family would just make jokes of like, wow, look at her. Look how much she can eat. She does this. She does that. But look at all of the things, you know, and it was really hard for me. I was gaining weight. I was losing my hair. I was losing myself within the identity of the things that I loved. And it just, none of it made any sense. I'm like, what is going on with me? Right. And so receiving a diagnosis like that, and I have never been about a diagnosis, I don't care what's wrong with me, just help me feel better, has truly been the last couple of years of my life. But it was really helpful. And it was interesting because I'm really interested if any of the other listeners have experienced their thyroid flip from like hypo to hyper or hyper to hypo before, because that's what happened to me. In the middle of 2015, when all this was going on, I lost all of this weight for no reason and nobody could figure out why, right? I had been overweight my whole life, couldn't figure it out as an, like I said, athlete eating well, not well. And then I lost all this weight and people are like, wow, like you look so great. What are you doing? And I'm like, I'm proudly dying. Like, but it was just really helpful to gain that type of diagnosis so I could better learn how to treat my thyroid specifically.
Yeah.
And I'll be honest, that diagnosis, like I said, was in 2016. It wasn't until this last October, 2023, that I started working with a functional medicine practice that I actually started to learn about some of these things because my physicians wanted to teach me. They didn't just want to treat me. They're educating me about what's actually going on in my body.
Wow.
Which I mean, honestly, is probably a great segue into why, you know, my Instagram handle is Hope for Healing, because I finally feel like for the first time in my life, first time since all this has happened, since 2010 and before, that I'm actually healing. But it's because I now have knowledge that I didn't have before.
And that's so upsetting because there is so much knowledge to be had. Like, all the research and all the scientists out there have learned so much about the body. But then as the patient, when you go to the doctor and you're sick and they're not even looking at your chart to realize that their own patient has lupus, you know, like you're not getting the information from the people that are supposed to be giving it to you. And there's amazing doctors out there. You know, there's so many great doctors.
I would like to believe my husband is one of them. Like, I get it. And it, I don't want to bash doctors, but it's like. Right.
But there are some doctors that are not checked in and whose priorities are not the life and health and vitality of their patients. So we're all human, you know, and it's so upsetting to hear a story like yours where you've been through something so horrific like that. Can you remind me, Hashimoto's, is that an overactive or underactive thyroid?
I literally can't remember right now.
I can never remember.
No, I believe that it's under, but if somebody's listening and they can correct us, we could Google it right now probably, but I don't remember.
I will Google it. I'll put it in the intro to the podcast so the listeners will already know. They'll know more than we do at this point.
And I'll be grateful. And that's one thing I've tried to really exhibit. And like, I just want to be so humble about how much I don't know yet.
Yeah.
About what people have labeled me with or doctors have told me I have. And that I know that I used to read a lot more research. I mean, honestly, when I became a mom, I barely have space to hold anything in my head anymore. But I think that it's this community, this chronic illness community, which sounds so depressing, but it's like anything but, has really just re-sparked that desire in me to like, I need to know more. I want to know more. Yeah. And just a quick segue into, you know, I moved into California in July. We're from the Midwest. We've never been out here. And so I had to reestablish all new physicians.
Oh, yeah.
And with, you know, through my husband's hospital. And the breaking point for me with American medicine, Western medicine, whatever you want to call it, MDs, DOs, the whole gamut, was I tried to schedule an appointment with a rheumatologist. The system out here that we're in is so weird. They're like, well, we have to do a video chat first. Don't come into the office, just do a video chat. I'm like, whatever. It's easier to not bring my kids anyway. So my husband and I are sitting in this video chat meeting. I had already sent her. I'm a good patient. I had sent her a PDF already of all my history, my recent labs, all the things. She joins the meeting and she goes, well, I just think we were going to put you on methotrexate, which is a common drug used for people with lupus, you know, but it's, it is a form of chemotherapy. And I just looked at her and I was like, is that all you have? I was like, is that all you have? That's your only suggestion for all of the symptoms and all the things I'm feeling right now. And she said, yes. And I said, I don't think we'll be needing your services.
Yeah.
And that, to me, that was the breaking point where I told my husband, listen, I know we have great medical insurance, but these people are not helping me. Like, I want to pursue functional medicine. I want to pursue a different approach. And that's what I spent some time doing some research, found an amazing practice out here in the greater Sacramento area where I'm from. And I've been working with this team of practitioners and some nutritionists. And for the first time in my life, I have knowledge about what's actually going on in my gut that's caused inflammation. And, you know, it turns out I actually also may have Lyme disease. I just had the test done 2 weeks ago. We're waiting for the results right now, which my question to the doctor was, what about my protocol right now would change if I did have it? Turns out it would change a lot. So I'm glad we got the test done. But there's so many things that I know now that I would have never known before, because my husband has looked over all my labs. He goes, I would never, ever order any of these labs for a patient.
Wow.
Because they're too expensive. The hospital doesn't want to pay for them. They're so rare. They're so this, they're so that. He's like, we are trained to not even go down that road.
Oh, that's so interesting. You're getting this behind the scenes look.
It's so true.
At the medical system while you're marching through it the way that all of us chronically ill people do.
I've been so helpful for it.
Yeah.
But so all these symptoms that I have, I still hold all of these diagnoses, but I have more knowledge now after going through much more, you know, minute, intensive blood work to say, oh, actually you have mold and yeast overgrowth in your gut, which could be causing joint pain and swelling and all these other symptoms, which could be a result of 1,000 different things, but either way, it's there, right? So right now I'm really working with my team to create some optimal gut health, which is amazing. I've been going through a really intense protocol since October. I found out that I have oxalate toxicity. Have you ever heard of that?
It's so funny. I saw that on your Instagram. I heard of that for the first time last week when I interviewed Marisa about mast cell activation in the podcast that came out last week. And she was saying that she has trouble digesting oxalates.
Yes.
Which I'd never heard of them before.
It can come from a couple of different things. It can come from, I have mold and yeast overgrowth currently right now. So when that happens, it can cause your kidneys, because oxalates are not detoxed through the liver. They're detoxed through the kidneys. And when your body has the inability to process them, they have to go somewhere. And so these tiny little oxalate crystals, which are basically shards of glass, have to go somewhere. So then they get deposited along the tissue all over your body.
Wow.
Which would explain many things about my life.
How does Sjogren's fit into this? Can you remind us what Sjogren's is and how does that fit into
this? Yes, I wrote it down because I knew we were going to be talking about a lot of different things. Sjogren's specifically, like, I was never told this is what it is. They were just like, you have this. Good luck. You know what I mean? But in my research and in my medical history that I send to any new doctor I have, under the title of Sjogren's, I just like to tell them the symptoms that I have from the diagnosis I've been given are, and I just kind of keep track of what symptoms are told or under Sjogren's.
Sure.
Again, an autoimmune disorder. People, please educate us more if you can. Again, I haven't spent a lot of mental energy sometimes looking into the diagnoses because I'm just trying to find solutions to the symptoms.
Sure. We did a great episode about Sjogren's, and my memory of this is... like the main symptoms is dry eyes
and dry mouth.
Dry mouth. Yeah. Just like all of the glands, I guess, that produce moisture
struggling. your salivary glands.
Salivary glands. Yeah.
Which I think is really funny because, like, I cry happy tears, angry tears, sad tears, all the tears. I have never been tear deficient, but I definitely have always had kind of that dry mouth situation going on. My husband likes to say it's just because I have a lot of emotions, but who knows why specifically. But again, it just kind of dries up a lot of things, and it can have like, again, that prolonged, like, chronic fatigue and a lot of other issues that we don't need to get into now when it comes to just, like, intimacy with your partner. It can affect a lot of those types of things.
Yeah. So, and you have, like, these illnesses stacking up that are all causing chronic fatigue, how do you even wake up and do anything?
I don't actually know. Jesus, like I literally don't know.
Yeah.
But I want to just speak really quickly, and there's going to be a little bit of controversy on this. I literally just saw this doctor post this, but back in 2020, I was desperate for any kind of help, any kind of healing. This was right before the world shut down, January 2020. And I did a 16-week lupus protocol diet where I was eating green smoothies. But in those green smoothies, I was consuming 7 to 10 cups of spinach a day. So spinach is the highest oxalate food you can consume.
Wow.
Okay. One cup of spinach, I believe, has about 700, what do they call them, milligrams? Whatever unit they use, it's like 700. The body can only handle between 200 to 300 a day.
Wow.
Basically, what I have learned through working with my functional medicine team is that I was poisoning myself while thinking that I could heal myself through this protocol that a physician put out for lupus specifically. Mm. Now, I will speak to the saying, I believe it truly healed one of my friends. My friend was in kidney failure. She couldn't find a donor. She was willing to try anything. She did this protocol and she was able to reverse her disease. Amazing. Wow. But I had probably already had the mold and the yeast overgrowth things going on at that time, which means my body did not have the right processes in place to get rid of those oxalates that I was taking in. Hmm. Which, so from 2020 on until recently, I was in the worst pain of my life ever. Wow. Never was getting better, always getting worse. Nothing was helping. And it was most likely because I ate a lot of spinach.
Yeah, that's so interesting. You know, spinach is also high histamine, and I have MCAS, so I'm on a low histamine diet. And if I ate that much spinach,
can be dangerous.
I'd get so sick in a completely different way. But like you said, for your friend, super healthy, super good for them. Everybody's biochemistry is different. And that's why, you know, when you see an influencer online saying, this is the thing that will heal you, you always got to say, okay, well, maybe that healed you, but that doesn't mean it's going to heal me. Sometimes these things are worth a try, but, you know, you got to find the right healthcare team to help you walk through these types of things. And like, that's why I say in every episode, nothing on this show is medical advice. You know, we're just sharing your story. By sharing as many stories as possible, I feel like all of these themes start to emerge and these different things for people to try start to emerge. But it has to be through the lens of a healthcare professional that's personalized 100%. To each individual person, because all of our bodies are different.
That's why I think it's just so fascinating that physicians, specifically rheumatologists who primarily work with autoimmune disorders, don't do more specific testing before putting people on drugs. Hmm. Just because our bodies are so unique, right? Like one thing that could have helped my friend almost killed me. Like things that help me won't help somebody else. You know, like since October, I've done several rounds of the autoimmune protocol diet. I have done all of the things. I have tried everything. But this time, yes, I'm like dairy-free, gluten-free, corn-free, soy-free. But the difference is instead of eating a raw vegan diet, like I think literally like the carnivore diet is healing my body.
Wow.
Like there's just so much more research on what my physicians were able to do with my blood work and saying this, these are what your needs are and this is where you can get it, while also removing some of the largest, you know, inflammatory foods, which is very common. But the goal for them, you know, which I'm encouraged by, is they're like, let's get your body to an optimal place of healing, right? In your gut, in your body, your inflammation, in your mind, in your mental health. And then we'll start to add some of these things that you enjoy back in, you know, and they've taught me so much more about like, I just enjoy the things I'm eating again versus eating to try and like scrape at the wall of like, can I heal? Can I heal by taking this up, by taking that up, by doing this? Mm. And they're just very systematic with how they add in supplements based on what my body needs, not somebody else's treatment plan.
Yeah, that's
amazing.
You
know, it's like I actually wrote it down so I could remember. Right now, I'm currently taking 63 pills a day. Since October, which is a shit ton of pills. Like, yeah. I don't know if we're supposed to curse on the show. It's a lot of pills.
Yeah.
But it is. But it's working. Not because they're magic. It's because They're treating the specific things that my body has needed that they didn't have before, right? So I'm taking binders to help detox and get rid of the different, you know, yeast, mold, and oxalate stuff that my body is detoxing currently. I'm increasing the supplements that blood work showed were low. There's just so many things that are so specific now about my treatment plan that, yes, it is hella expensive.
Yeah.
But what is my health worth?
Totally.
Like, what is my health worth? And I don't feel, I feel so blessed to be able to afford to do this because I know not everyone can pursue maybe a more holistic approach, even if they wanted to. And so I do not take that for granted. But I also have realized that as much as we need our physical bodies to get in order and to like get in line so that we can get back to living the lives that like we want to live and that we've grieved, that we felt like we've lost, that healing is such a full body, mental, emotional, relational experience. And I finally feel like all the pieces are coming together for me where I feel like I have the spiritual support that I've had the spiritual support for a while, but it's now in a place where having a bad day doesn't like ruin my week. Having a bad day doesn't ruin my month like it used to, you know, where I now have the support where even though we've just moved to California, I have a list of five people. Hey guys, I can't do it today. I can't parent. I can't pick up my kid. 3 weeks ago, I was carrying my baby down the stairs on my butt because my feet hurt so bad from my oxalate detoxing. I was like, I can't carry my kid today. Like, what am I supposed to do? Well, the answer is you need to have the people, right? So I've had the people now. And now that I have the emotional and mental skill sets that are in place to help deal with the rage that comes with the pain, you know, there's just so many pieces to the puzzle that have to be in place for us to heal. And it's so overwhelming.
Yeah. If you don't have the dietary support or the supplement support or the prescription medication support that you need, and that's individual for each person, then how are you going to make progress? You know,
like, I don't know.
Sometimes you can luck or stumble into one piece of it at a time.
It's so true.
But for me, it was a similar thing where like I needed all of it to kind of be in place together because every little bit was giving me 5% of my life back. But when you combined, you know, like a whole giant handful of pills, like that's like 30-40% right there. So it can really, really start to add up. Is your current regimen through these functional medicine doctors, is there prescription medicine in there also, or is it just
naturopathic supplements? The only prescription medication that I'm currently on, and if I was told in my appointment actually on Monday this week that if I do test positive for Lyme, they do want to start putting me on some antifungal medications, and they're going to talk through both holistic options for me as well as like pharmaceutical options. But back in, I guess it's only... this year has felt so long already. It's actually the last day of February. But in January, I started taking a medication called low-dose naltrexone.
Yeah, oh my God, absolutely. I literally ordered some today. I finally found a place to get some. Yeah, I've never tried it. I keep hearing about it, hosting the podcast, and for MCAST specifically. Again, Marisa talked about it in last week's episode, and she sent me a website that I could go to actually order some.
Oh,
so
sweet.
Yeah, I finally pulled the trigger on that.
That's amazing. My functional medicine team works directly with a manufacturer. And so they were able to kind of just order it directly for me, which was really awesome. I kind of just went through my first round of testing the dosage. The order that I just placed today, I'm going up to 3 milligrams per day. If you remember, the max is 4.5. Mm-hmm. You know, but specifically the reason why it works is because the medication helps modulate the immune system. So it has just like such broad applications, you know, and it's so funny. I told my husband, hey, have you ever heard of, you know, LDN? He's like, yeah, that's like helps people come off narcotics. And I was like, well,
yeah,
if it's going to help me,
high dose naltrexone.
And let me tell you though, I've not had such horrible experiences with prescription medications. And I was told, I was that like poster patient where it's like, you may experience these side effects. And I would come to my next appointment saying, I experienced these side effects. I mean, I know I wasn't going to say anything bad about medications, but the medication gabapentin almost killed me.
Wow.
And I say that to say it helped with my pain a little bit, but I became so disturbed in my mental health while on that medication. I could not distinguish reality from what was going on in my brain.
Really?
It was such a dangerous experience for me. And when I finally came off of that drug, I was so afraid to try anything new. I was so afraid of what it would do to me, that I would lose myself again, that I would have to stop working, or how it would affect my marriage. But I had done a lot of research, and my current physician, she provided me with some amazing resources to learn about it. And I have not had any side effects. It's been 6 weeks, I think, that I've been on it. And I truly believe it's both not only taking off the edge on my physical pain, but I find that it's just helping me regulate my nervous system, my emotions. I feel like I'm able to handle my anger a little bit more confidently. I mean, wow.
Incredible.
I just want to speak really quickly to the emotion and the response of anger if you live with chronic pain. I truly believe it's been my thorn in the flesh, my cross to bear kind of thing as a result of my chronic illness. It's damaged relationships. It's affected me at work. It's affected my marriage, and it has affected my parent. And I say that to say these children are so young and innocent. Like, they're literally 3 and 1. They're crazy. They're supposed to be crazy. And I realized back, it was right before I started working with the team I'm with now, I realized if I didn't figure out how to get my anger under control, I was going to start to affect the environment in which my children would be raised. And I realized that there was just so much depth to my anger. And at the root of it, it's not even the diagnoses, right? It's not what I've lost or the life that I've grieved, not infertility. It's literally boils down to just the physical pain day in and day out for 15 years. And just how deeply rooted that is within my heart of just like, it's almost like the there's no justice in it. I can't find a way to rationalize, even within my strong faith, to say, why me? Like, who cares? Brain surgery, lupus, Hashimoto's, I don't care. For me, it's always been about the pain. And I've been working with this really amazing team, and I've actually started implementing. I realized I've spent 10 years being a behavior analyst. Why can I not change my own behavior? What the heck?
Yeah.
I started doing some really specific research on how my science has been applied to mood disorders, to anger management. I've gotten some really amazing coaching from behavior analysts around the world who have worked specifically in this this domain. The science that I practice is called applied behavior analysis, and it is predominantly used for children with autism, but it has been applied to many different lifestyles, addictions, PTSD across the world. And there's more and more research coming out about that. And I was able to really just start realizing I had the skills I needed to do it. I just needed somebody to say, this is how we can apply what you already know to your own life. And I've really started making gains in that area. It's been so freeing. Honestly, it's part of the reason why I started my Instagram page, Hope for Healing with Mackenzie, is because I realized that like all these experiences that I had, like we talked about it, I'm like, there's purpose in them, and I'm going to probably spend the rest of my life figuring out what that actually is. But I think a portion of that is, if I can help even one person who's a few steps behind me, who is where I was a month ago, 2 months ago, a year ago, then it is worth it for me to have lived with the pain that I have lived. And that may sound super cheesy, but I actually believe that it's true.
Oh, I mean, you're speaking to me, and why do you think this show exists? Yeah, I mean, I had so much anger for years, and all of that anger has sort of left my body. And
That's amazing.
Listening to you talk about it, I'm like, when did that happen? You know, is it because I got a diagnosis and I'm now being seen by doctors who care and who are helping? I mean, that's a huge part of it. Winning my disability case was a huge part of it. Having, you know, going, literally going to trial to say, is this kid sick? You know?
Oh my gosh.
And winning, I mean, that was like, I'm still kind of shook by that. I actually like talked to my lawyer today and, you know, it's just all good news. And I'm like, I don't know how to manage that.
You're like, waiting for something bad to happen when you're nothing bad.
That's where like my anxiety is higher now because of that exact thing of like things have really turned around for me.
Yeah.
And in some ways that's scary. But when I think about like, when did the anger leave me? I think it actually happened before that. I think it happened before I got diagnosed, when I was so sick and I was using a wheelchair and I could barely function, could barely walk. And getting in a wheelchair like gave me my life back in a big way, where it's like, now I can go outside and not be afraid of not getting home because I've collapsed. And all of a sudden,
that's funny. It's so relatable.
Like,
that's such
a
relatable statement.
All of a sudden, being outside felt better and was more beautiful than I'd ever experienced. And I think those are the moments in which my anger started to leave my body, when I started to realize this horror show that I've lived through has given me perspective on how to actually see beauty in the world. And maybe there was value in it that I'm just starting to unravel. And then I got a diagnosis and won my disability case and started getting better and stopped needing the wheelchair. And it almost felt like letting go of the anger was sort of like passing the test. And I don't know. I mean, this is, we're getting into the spiritual side of being sick, which is hugely important. And you've mentioned your faith a couple times. How does your faith play into your anger? And is this anger, is any of this anger directed at God for being, why me? Why am I sick?
That's a great question. I think there's been seasons since 2010 where the answer to that is definitely yes. Because I believe God could heal me at any moment of any time if he chose to.
Oh my God.
I've had many, you know, of those moments of just like, okay, I'm ready. Like, I've suffered enough.
Yeah.
What more do you want me to learn from this? You know, those types of conversations. But I think as my faith has grown and I've grown in just understanding the theology of what I specifically believe in, you know, there's people in my life from all walks of faith, from, you know, my husband grew up Hindu, and there's just so many different ways spirituality has affected my life, you know, but for me specifically, what I believe, I think I've just gotten to this place where like, I mean, yeah, just if I'm speaking frankly, like Jesus suffered and he said, if we love him, we will also suffer. And that can look like a lot of different things. There's a few things that have given me a lot of hope specifically for how I physically feel. And there's this one piece of scripture that I come back to all the time. And there's this writer and he's writing to a city of people and he's saying, listen, I can comfort you. And I want you to know why. I can comfort you because I have suffered in the exact way that you have suffered. And so I want you to know that I understand where you're coming from, not because I have encouraging words or, you know, false hope to bring, because I've been there and I've walked through it and I am still alive. And I'm paraphrasing, obviously. But I've looked at that and I've looked at my life and I've looked at the people I've met since 2010. And I look at the people that I have relationships with and the people I've gotten to coach. I do some coaching on the side just through mental mindset and habit formation for people with chronic illnesses. And I don't think I would trade health for that.
Yeah.
And that's a scary thing to say.
Yeah.
I met my husband because of it, which is so random. He also has his own slew of very intense medical diagnoses. And I think, like I said, like there's just a peace about it. And it doesn't mean that I don't stop praying for full healing. I'm finding healing. I have found the people and I am experiencing physical healing in my body. I think for the first time ever. And it's so hopeful. But I also want to choose to believe that if I never found physical healing, that it wouldn't allow my faith to waver. Talk to me in a couple years. We'll see how things go. But I think also, you know, I talked to it a bit at the beginning, but even just infertility is a part of my chronic illness story. And that was a dark season, a dark, dark season. I thought I would hate everyone forever for a period of time. I would just read really depressing scripture. I was like, I still have faith. I'm reading scripture about wanting to die. All joking aside, but it's like, you're saying that you feel like your anger started releasing from your body before, almost like before the tip over the hill, right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
And I feel that so truly about my children. I feel like I found emotional and spiritual and mental healing with that specific story, that the infertility piece of my story, before my first son came. And I feel so grateful for that, that it wasn't, you gave me what I needed and I finally won something. It's, I found peace either way. Mm-hmm. And then a blessing came, and I'm so grateful
That's
for
it.
That.
Yeah.
I'm so grateful for that experience. And again, the number of women I've gotten to encourage and cry with and sit with as they too are on their journey towards motherhood because of my own experience, I don't think I would trade it.
Yeah, totally. I totally relate to what you're saying. And yeah, I mean, my relationship with my partner, Andy, is amazing. She's brought so much joy to my life. And there was so many times where I was so sick and thinking like, nothing is going right, you know, like everything's wrong. I'm so sick. But then I have this partner in this relationship that is just right. And mm-hmm. what I've always wanted. And having one thing that is that important mm-hmm. be that good also like started to deflate this anger that I had at the mm-hmm. universe, you know? Mm-hmm. It's like, obviously mm-hmm. things can go right for me because this person is choosing to be with me.
I know, so, isn't that amazing? Any of us yeah. would have partners that have stayed with us
yeah.
when we were like in the thralls of like, woe is me, will I ever climb out of this pit? And they're like, yeah. you'll be okay. They're like calling down from the top, like, we're yeah. still here. You know, I'm just like so grateful for those people in our lives. And yeah. I know that not everyone feels that type of support. And I had a really weird situation happen to me on social media today. And I would say 99% of my experience has been amazing. Amazing conversations, amazing time encouraging and learning from other people. So finally experienced my first like just real idiotic hateful comment on Instagram today. And I've just realized, I'm like, people are just looking for meaning. They're looking to make themselves feel important or valued or whatever it may be. And so that's the wrong way to do it. Let's just start with that way. But like, I think that's what's so beautiful about places like this, where you and I are talking on the same coast, but states away, or social media or Instagram, is because we remember seasons of our life where we couldn't leave our house.
Yeah.
Where we couldn't go anywhere. We couldn't do anything. And to have a community now, like if I had what I have right now, 10 years ago, I can't imagine how different it would have been for the better. I mean, amazing.
Yeah.
And so totally. To be able to do that for other people, if I'm able to, I feel like it's not even that like I want to, I feel like I have to.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that leads beautifully into my last question for you, which is thinking about those other people who are on their journey, maybe just starting their journey, and thinking back to yourself when you were just starting your journey. You've learned so much since then. You've been through so much. You've had so many diagnoses, but you're now finally in a place of healing.
Mm-hmm.
And there were so many dark days between then yeah. and now, so many days where you just don't know how you're going to make it to the next day. So what are the words of advice that you'd give to someone at the beginning of their journey for how do you make it through the next day to give yourself the chance to make it to a place of healing?
It's a great question. And we all could probably answer that 1,000 different ways. But what I thought about today, honestly, you know, like if I could go back and talk to myself, like I wish that somebody had told me that there's a reason to still hope for something better, right? That like there was reason enough to fight for the hope of running again. Like, I used to be a runner. My last marathon was 2018. I can barely wear tennis shoes right now. But I have hope that one day I'm going to run again, right? But I remember the days where I'm like, there is no hope. And I think that the advice then would be, you need people in your life who are going to speak hope into you when you have nothing left. Like, there were women in my life that when I couldn't hope for myself, they were like, that's fine. We have enough hope for both of us. And I think you need to have those people in your life, because we can't always see the truth. We can't always see reality, right? Even now, there's so many things that I need people to speak truth into my life when all I'm believing are the lies about who I am because of our diagnoses, who I am because of my anger, who I am because of my limitations. We need people that know us so intimately that can say, that's not who you are. You know, and it can be really hard work to find those people.
Yeah.
But it's worth the effort. Right? Because we've all been there on our darkest days alone, when it's like, I personally have never been in a situation where I've acted on any type of suicidal type thoughts, but I have definitely had those conversations that have startled people who don't understand, of like, I don't want to be here anymore if this is what it's like. I love my life. I love my kids. I love my husband. But where can I find reprieve? And I think it's having those people in your lives during those days that you're like, yep, I'm going to make it to tomorrow. There's joy in the morning. What is that going to look like? Because some days it doesn't seem very hopeful.
Wow. This has just been amazing. I mean, this has been an incredible conversation. Please stay in touch and keep me updated on what's happening with your journey, because you're obviously still in the midst of it. I'm so glad that we caught you at a moment where things are looking up. And
yes.
And you have that hope, and you're moving forward, and you have this amazing care team. So I'm so curious to see what happens next for you.
Me too.
Please tell our listeners where they can go to connect with you online, check you out right on social media, anything else you want to plug.
Yeah, right now I just have a personal business account at on Instagram, Hope for Healing with Mackenzie. Mackenzie spelled a little weird, so look for it in the podcast. It's not with a C. So Hope for Healing with Mackenzie. And my primary objective on that account is to just share my story and bring encouragement and truth, but then also just share some practical tips that I have been implementing and have worked with other individuals in coaching to help, not with their physical healing, right? Let's leave that to the people that know all the sciences. I don't even know half the stuff about my own diagnoses. We all learn that, right? But I think what I bring to the table for people is my decade of experience with behavior modification and mental mindset shifts, and how that can affect us positively when done in the right way with people with chronic illnesses. And it's truly been a blessing to be able to utilize the science I've spent such a long time learning about and apply it to this specific, not niche, but it's like this lifestyle of how do we thrive in the midst of our diagnoses? How do we thrive in the midst of our chronic illness? And right, we're still doing that. I'm still doing that. But again, right, like, I've come far enough to say I now can help people who are catching up to me, and it's such a blessing.
Wow. Well, I'm just amazed by your openness and willingness to, you know, to show up to this conversation in such a profound way.
Thank you.
Has been such a delight, and I just really appreciate it.
I'm like on
it.
A high right now. It's like, I should go to bed, but like, I have energy. So it's like, should I clean? Should I do the dishes? Like, what should I do?
Yeah, there's that energy that is created from two human beings talking that is...
Oh. It's so
one
true.
Of my favorite things in the world. It's why I podcast. And it's every awesome. Time that it is kindled, it's like a flame. Every time it's kindled in a conversation, I get so excited.
It's so true.
Yeah. And I mean, obviously, that very much happened during this recording. So, Mackenzie, thank you so much for coming on the show.
It's my pleasure. I can't wait to keep up with all the other conversations you get to have and continue to learn.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Major Pain. I'm Jesse Mercury, your host and the producer of this podcast. Artwork by Egg Salad Salad. Our theme music is the song Time Machine from my sci-fi synth-pop album, available at jessemercury.bandcamp.com. Send your thoughts or questions to our email address, majorpainpodcast@gmail.com. You can also use that address to find us on PayPal. Tips are greatly appreciated. Don't forget to leave a positive rating and review on Apple Podcasts or the podcast platform of your choice. Find more information about this show or leave a comment on any episode at our website, majorpainpodcast.com. Major Pain is supported by listeners on Patreon. Thank you to our $2 per month supporters, our $7 per month patrons Naomi Adele Smith, Sunny Roberts, Laura Stevens, Kelsey Madsen, All Around Foundation Waterproofing, Alexandria Henderson, Justin Minnick, Heather Muncy, and Robert, and our $25 per month producers Steve Kavanaugh, Chris Fowler, Trish O'Brien, and Hipster Leia. Learn how you can support the show while receiving special recognition, gifts, and monthly bonus episodes at patreon.com/majorpainpodcast.